Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. We are excited about today's episode. It is our third with the GWA, so the GWA show. We had the opportunity to catch up with Tom and talk to him all about the first contest of the season. It was in Punta Preta, and as most of you, if you've already seen it, but if you haven't seen it, make sure to check some of that live feed. Also, some of their new format for video. Absolutely insane. The action was intense, so I do really hope you enjoy this episode and also some of that recap from the GWA themselves. So, if you haven't caught last week's episode, I would make sure to do so. It was with Gunner from Indiana Paddle Surf. We had an amazing chat getting to know Gunner and also introducing him to all of you. So I would urge you guys to go ahead and ladies to go ahead and listen to that, and I hope you enjoy it. Don't forget, if you want to support our show, there are multiple ways to do so. The easiest way is to follow us on Instagram, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and also make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you want, we would love some five-star reviews. Those do go a long way to help our show grow. If you want to help out in the day-to-day, visit www.winglifepodcast.com and click on Support Us to donate a few dollars or jump on a monthly subscription. We do appreciate your support, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome to the Wing Life Podcast, where we talk about wing foiling and the lifestyles of those who enjoy this great sport. So you got to ride at Punta Preta then?
Yeah. I rode on the day after the comp, which was already dropping a bit. It was already smaller, quite a bit smaller, but it was still working, yeah. And a lot more busy, yeah. Obviously, than in the heat.
It's not your golden hour of like two people on that wave.
No, but still it was fine. You know, it was all the kite and wing competitors out. So, you know, they saw me that I wanted to get a few waves. So they were kind of, okay, let's take it, go, let's get it. You know, and it was good. I rocked up. I dropped some guys surfing at the beach with us. Have a look. And I knew it's going to be crazy busy the day after the comp. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go to Alibaba or Kuala Lumpur to some other spots in the north, which are anyway bigger. And then I arrived in Punta Preta and I dropped some of the judges that went for a surf, and it was like four kites out and that's it at noon. I was like, whoa, okay, that's the chance. I need to get right now, you know? So I quickly went to, I didn't bring any gear. So I got some gear from Wesley. I went to town, quickly fetched some gear from Wesley, came back. It took me an hour or something. And when I came back, it was already 15 guys out in the water. Kites. And then I was like, whatever, I'm gonna just give it a go. So I just pumped my wing and I set up the board. I had an hour and a half session in Punta Preta, which was fun, but yeah, I was busy. And it, you know, I always, because I'm a regular footer, so I in Mauritius I ride backside all the time. So for me it was super nice to ride such a good wave on my front side for the first time.
That would be actually,
so yeah, exactly. So usually I never have the opportunity to ride these kind of good waves on my front side because Mauritius is all left. And then, so I had an hour and a half session and we packed up, I had some lunch, and then went up to the north with some of our crew and we scored some good waves in Kuala Lumpur for a second session, same day, which was a lot bigger than Punta. It was like 3 meters and good size, you know. But it was very, very fast weights, you know. It was a really, I only had one foil on the H50, and it was, the wave was pretty fast for H50. I should have gone on something smaller, but still it was fun, you know. As I said, I usually never get to ride myself I go to bed, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely, because you're normally completely working. And so we talked to Bo before this because she was there a week before training and she was a little worried about the forecast, but from what we saw, it turned out. So how did the overall event turn out for you?
Yeah, it turned out great in the end. But you have to say, nobody was like too sure about it. It was, of course, you need to be a bit lucky too. And Cape Verde has not been having the best season in general this year. because usually it's a place, let's say in January, February, that's very consistent in terms of good swell directions and wind. It hasn't been really, really firing the weeks before the event. I mean, those people who went out early to train can tell you about that. So we were actually pretty lucky when we saw the forecast. It was basically, you know, like good solid forecast for what had been the 1-2 months before. So we were all pretty excited about it. But you know how it is. You never know. You know, to get good conditions in such a spot, everything needs to line up. You need to have the right swell direction, the right period, the right angle, size, obviously. And it was quite surprising because we ran the kite and the wing. And on the day before the first day of the competition, which had actually nothing special on the forecast, it was basically we started on the 16th, which was the Friday, and the 17, 18 had 18, 19 were the good forecast. But already on the first day, it turned out to be pretty good conditions. And so we kicked off with the kite event right on the first day, did like, yeah, nearly all day competition. We progressed really far. And we're super stoked because we were like, oh man, forecast on the first day was nothing special. It's been an epic day already. We had like, you know, overhead waves and good wind and solid footage. So it will only get better. You know, the next day is just going to be bigger, better. It's going to be awesome. And then the second day came. And the second day, it was flat, you know, and the forecast was better that day. Yeah, and the second day, we were, oh yeah, but tomorrow we can finish kiting maybe already. And then the second day, we came in the morning and it was flat. I mean, flat, but it was in Ponta Preta, you need to have a certain swell size because otherwise the waves break straight on the rocks and you can't ride it, especially on the foil. It's really, really close. Like if it's, I would say if it's not at least head high,
okay, good.
It's actually too small
to
ride it on a foil. And so we were hanging out. We started super early. We were hanging out the whole day waiting that the swell picks up and it just didn't happen. So in the end of the day, we ran, I think, one heat and really... Yeah, marginal bad conditions. And we're like, whoa, okay, that is a bummer because the forecast was way better than the day before, but it didn't turn out. Might be not a good sign for the next days, you know. Maybe the swell has the wrong directions, too much north. It just doesn't, you know, turn in. Because in Cape Verde in South, especially you have the West Coast, and Ponta Preta is basically the most southern spot on the West Coast. So the swells wrap around the west side coming from the north and hit the spots that are further up north, better usually, and bigger and earlier. And those were firing that day, but Ponta Preta didn't get waves. So we were like, hopefully, you know, the wave direction is not too much north and we're not going to have anything in Ponta. But okay, next day came, Sunday, and we arrived at the beach and yeah, it picked up a lot. It was solid, you know, it was Sunday and you could see decent set coming in, you know, like way over double head. And but it was not that clean yet. And the wind was really thickly in the morning. Like it was not really strong enough. And we were planning, it was Sunday, we were planning to run the kites on that day because, we wanted to finish first all kite. And also, you know, Sunday is the most busy day. And in the kite discipline, we had a lot of Cape Verdeans that were competing. There's a lot of good guys. And you know how it is. I mean, all their friends are on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's showtime, and it was awesome. We realized that we couldn't start early in the morning, so we realized we cannot finish the whole kite discipline. We can only finish either the men's or the women's. So we make the decision to run the whole men's division because we knew we had Eto, Nito, Macho, like all the Cape Verdean boys, you know. And the beach gonna be packed, so we have to run the boys, you know, and make sure we get that men's final on Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And this turned out to be epic, you know. It was big. It got bigger and bigger throughout the day. It was actually the biggest day of the event,
okay.
But it was not the cleanest day of the event. So it was big waves, but not a lot of waves that were connecting all the way in the bay. So a lot of waves were shorter, but it was big peaks and was good size. And yeah, and it turned out that the kite event had Ayrton, Vito at the final on Sunday afternoon, like 4 in the afternoon, 5 in the afternoon. I don't know how many people were there, but I think it was like 1,000 people on the rocks in Ponta Preta, or maybe a couple hundred at least. It was like in a soccer stadium, you know, the final, 2 Cape Verdean, two multiple world champs in the final. And when Ayrton won the final, like, I would say 100 people like ran into the water and picked him up out of the water on the shoulders. And And it was awesome. It was like, I got goosebumps seeing that. There's not many events in the world where, you know, the crowd and the spectators are so hot and so passionate and, you know, like so connected with the athletes. And Ponta Preta is, in my opinion, the best place in the world to run a wave competition in, whatever it is, kiting, winging, or windsurfing, because the wave breaks just a couple of meters away from the rocks. The riders are riding on the waves and hear the crowd screaming while they are on the wave because it's so close. You know, there's no better place to live stream and shoot because everything is basically 30 meters in front of you. If somebody crashes, he basically ends up in the crowd of the rocks, gets lifted out, and runs back to the beach. It's an amazing place to have a wave competition. So that was Sunday. We got the men's finals done, epic, you know, big celebration, Ayrton winning the event. And then it got into Monday. And Monday, the waves turned to be even cleaner. It was maybe slightly smaller. I wouldn't say a lot, but slightly smaller. But now the wave direction started to be on, like fully on, right direction, super long, steep walls all the way down into the bay. So we were first finishing the girls' kite in the morning, which just took us 2 hours, and then immediately switched to winging and set the wing guys and girls out. Okay. And the first day, we actually only run the guys because we were not sure if a lot of girls going to feel comfortable going out in these conditions. It was, you know, the sets were, I would say four meters.
That's huge.
Faces, you know, it was huge. Good size and fast waves.
Yeah,
and it's a powerful fast waves. Yeah, and the good sets. We had the men's outs. We ran, I think, the first three rounds of the men on the first day of the event in epic conditions, and it was already, you know, at that point you could tell. As I said, there was before the kite competition, before the kite, there was not much to train. So it was the first time really the guys were in the water and we could see what the level is about. Because the year before, it's been more about, okay, this is the first ever wave discipline event. And we're going to go into Ponta Preta, which is a very famous place. And we are not sure if it's actually wingable. And we found out last year the show was amazing and it is absolutely wingable. And nobody needs to be afraid of that. But that was more, I would say, the consensus and the outcome last year, where this year it was more about where can you push the boundaries and how extreme can you go. And it was clear from the first heat on, you know, the level was super high. I first have to say, I mean, we had such a high number of people who wanted to enter the event. So in our wave events, we only allow a maximum of 24 riders per gender. Men and 24 women, but women we had anyway less. But on the men's side, we had more than 60 people who wanted to enter from all over the world. So from last year's first event in Cape Verde, first wave event, we had around 30, so pretty much the number that can compete. In Rio de Janeiro last year, we had already 45, something like this. In Dakhla, in Morocco, in the final last year, we had already 55. And now we were standing at 62 or 63 men that wanted to enter the event. So it was a pretty tough selection. You know, you get the top guys for the world ranking, and then you got a lot of video wild cards and selections from GWA. And there was a lot of new guys with super high level that never competed before. It was a pretty tough selection to actually find out the right people. And I think we had a good picks. You know, there was a couple of new faces that really showed that they were picked for a reason. And they could perform really well, although we haven't seen them on a competition before. And and it was a lot about innovation, actually, where can you push it? You know, this generation now of wing foilers that going into the waves and now training harder, let's say, in heavier waves. I know last year or even in the beginning, you know, everybody was thinking, okay, foils are more for mushy around the waves. This is not for heavy barreling waves. And for sure, you need the right gear. And I mean, most of the guys wear foils between 500 and 700 front wings to be able to do the speed and keep the control, you know, not getting lifted too heavily out of these big waves. Especially guys like Cash, Marlo, you know, the top guys that ended up on the top positions. It was so impressive to me to see, you know, risking these kind of maneuvers like foil slide on the face or even a foil slide on floating on top of the wave. You need to be so confident on what you're doing to pull this move off. Because, you know, if anything goes wrong only by a millimeter, okay, you're going to end up on the rocks heavily. And, you know, you just need to be, I was really impressed by how confident these boys are and girls. I have to say, I don't want to put the boys only in front. Of course, the performance of Cash and Milo and some of those guys are outstanding, but the girls were ripping too. The girl, Elena, who won the event, absolutely deserved it. You know, anybody in the contest, boy or girl, was saying,
"Oh, awesome.
Hats off to this girl. This girl doesn't give a shit." You know, she was going on the biggest one. She had a few, the nastiest wipeouts of the whole competition. I think she had two or three of them. And every time she came out of the rock smiling and said, "Well, let's go again." She was never scared. And and I think everybody, you know, including Muna, was saying, "Well, she deserves to win, you know. She is the one who's pushing the woman side here more extreme than others." And, you know, everybody's happy for her to win. I mean, she's not a full pro rider. You know, she lives in the Canary Islands. She's a firefighter. That's
good
her real
her.
Job. And is a pretty good surfer. But last year we saw her for the first time in Cape Verde, and she was already catching, you know, the attention of people. But from last year to this year, she explained to me that she has trained a lot on the wing. You know, before she was surfing was her main sport, and she started winging. But you could see the surfing experience in terms of how she picks waves and how she's not afraid of going big waves. But between last year and this year, Cape Verde, she spent a lot of time on the wing, and she improved her technique on wing foiling a lot. She does a lot of surf foiling too. And you could really see that. Yeah, no, was awesome to watch. I think both the boys and the girls were incredible, the performance. And then on the boys' side, obviously, Cash wasn't at the event last year. He missed out. And also Marlo, the top two guys this year in the event, they were not competing ever the last year. So it was the first time they were riding this wave in the comp. Both of them last year were only starting the tour in Rio, not in Cape Verde. And it was interesting to see because they were obviously seated number one and two. Were seated opposite of each other. So they would meet each other most likely before the end or towards the competition. So they were both making their way to the ladder. And I think Marlo and Cash, they have a different style. I think Marlo has an incredible top to bottom style with very vertical turns in really critical sections. Then Cash has more of to implement a bit more innovation. You know, maybe sometimes not as clean on the turns, but he's trying things that other people don't do, you know, and that gives him that extra thing. So it was good to see those boys moving up besides others. You know, I don't want to say these are the only ones, but I think those two deserve to be in the final. We had one of those, our wildcard picks that we actually gave him a wildcard to compete for the first time, ended up in the third place, which was Nathan van Wooren from South Africa. He was one of our wildcard picks, and he was doing very well too. And they were motivated too, the South African crew. And I don't think they ride these kind of waves often back home. I mean, they have good conditions of Africa, but Ponta Preta is a really special wave. And a couple others, like Finn Spencer ended up fourth. He's doing great as well. You know, it was not his first event, but you could see that he had a good time out there too. And the level was super dense, you know, and it was a lot of close heats as well. I think, you know, guys like Axel Gera, who is now on tour since the beginning, since he's 14, now he's 16, maybe 17, but still one of the younger ones, was performing very well. We had Leo Chil, a young 14-year-old that came on the scene last year. We gave him a spot also for the first time. This guy has potential as well. He's still obviously a bit young, and he will still gain more competition, but he definitely had skills, as well as Noah Kuyala, man. I think he's one of the best overall talent anyway, be it freestyle, be it race, be it the waves. He was performing incredibly good. But also, you know, the other regulars, for sure. Benoit Carpentier, Wesley, our winner from last year.
I saw that,
He lost against Axel. Yeah. But I know there's a lot of scores where we're really tight. So I wouldn't say, you know, that it was clear who's going to win. But for sure, I think Cash and Marlo deserve to go all the way to the final. And then, yeah, and I think it was interesting to see because they both scored incredibly high single wave scores. But Cash had a little bit the upper hand in the heats before without directly competing with Mado. Yeah, he was showing a bit more innovation and he scored some very high scores, even tens, I think. When it came to the final, in all his heats before, he kind of, you know, did a couple of good waves, made sure he had some 8-9s on the scoreboard already. You have two waves counting, and then you can start to play a little bit. But in that final heat, maybe played it a bit too much. And he got a solid score and then went like mid heat for a really risky maneuver and tried like a lip slide on the foil on the floater. Yeah. Got back into the wave, you know, like everybody was like, whoa, that would have been an incredible score. Landed it, but the wave shut down behind him. So he couldn't, like, he landed the trick off the lip, coming into the wave, but he couldn't make it out of the wave. So he had no chance than going with the wine water on the rocks. So it poked him on the rocks, which lost him a lot of time. But everybody was there to help him, get him out, bring him back down to the beach, get him launched, get back out on the water. Mado, in the meantime, did his job, you know, got some solid scores in. And it was leading, not a huge amount, but it was leading by a point and a half or something like this. But yeah, Cash had still the opportunity, 5 minutes, to score another set. And then he went out and was like, okay, 5 minutes, he's going to get one set, get a high score, and he can still make it. So he goes out, and when the first set comes along, he gets onto the set, takes the biggest wave of the set. And what does he do? Instead of riding it like he did the other times, he just lets the wing go and tries to get barreled. And actually, yeah. I mean, he got us all cover. He got out, but he had some more wing. So urged to continue the wave. So he pumped out, basically pumped back on the next wave where Mado was on, jumped on that one. I mean, he knew already that, you know, he's going to blow it in a way because that's interference. I mean, you cannot pump out and then pump on the next wave where the other competitor is on. Anyway, he had no wing anymore. But for the showmanship, it was incredible. So he was riding the wave on the spoil without a wing next to Mado, who was riding with the wing, pumped out into the next one, pick a third one. And man, the beach was screaming. It was the show in the final was unbelievable. I have never seen this was the most entertaining heat and the most exciting heat I have seen in a long time.
Oh, you know, that's amazing.
Doesn't matter the discipline. And then and obviously you didn't get like a high nine or anything for that. But for the show, I think everybody, like, you know, was giving him standing ovations. Yeah, he got, obviously, with that last wave, no more wing, white water on the rocks. Then the red flag went up to the final heat. And also Mado on the last wave actually fell because he tried to risk your move. So then both of them came out after the final, climbing out by the rocks, the final heat of the men. And judges had to make, we didn't know the result right away. You know, I was on the beach and I was like, you guys, I need the result. You confirm these scores. I need to know what's going to come out here to know who's going to be announced as a winner. So like they were both on the beach and, you know, hugging each other for the good show without knowing yet who won. And then, then announcement came and Mado took the win, which say was fair because he had the better scores in the final. Yeah. And we went to the podium, but the show, it was incredible, the whole event, not only this heat, but I would say that men's final was the icing on the cake.
Well, Cash's little video went like viral all over Instagram. All you saw is everybody reposting him letting go of this thing and like, what is this kid doing? That was sick. Yeah.
Exactly. He did it twice, actually. He did it in one of the heats before as well. Yeah, he did it. But it was already in the heats before. He already had some scores on the table and he was already safe. He was already sitting on 18 and a half points out of 20. So, you know, he had already basically won. And then he tried it. And I saw that and I was like, what is he doing? Is he seriously letting the wing go and trying to get barreled? But on that first attempt, he got. I still did with my phone. And I was like, no, man, what did he just do? So he just got in the barrel, got even boom, and that's it. But on the final, it did it like, it worked, but it was kind of, man, if you wanted to win the car, maybe it was not the right move. But like you said, I think that video clip went viral and probably that's worth more than
winning
the
event. That's the thing. Like everybody knows who Cat. Well, they knew of him before, but yeah, definitely doing that there. Yeah, pretty epic. So that's cool. Nice.
I mean, anybody, I think it looks super red for anybody who sees it. But I can tell you, if you know that place and you've been there, especially if you've been riding this way yourself, you know, if you understand how much risk it is to do this, or how much risk it is to do what all these boys do, how they ride there. Now, I ride a lot of wing in waves, in good waves, and it blew my mind what I saw there. You know, I wasn't competing there, but I know what is winging in heavier waves.
Walk us through, what does nuts mean to somebody who lives on Mauritius? Because you got some epic waves over there.
Yeah, we got epic waves, but it's just, no, exactly. The waves here are nothing short to the ones in Cape Verde.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. I ride these kind of waves, but not in this way, what these boys are doing, you know? Like taking so much risk on the critical parts of the wave and experimenting with innovative maneuvers, you can do that on the shoulder. And I see people trying that, but doing that in the critical part of the wave, doing aerial maneuvers, landing back into the wave, just with the power of the foil without using the wing. You know, obviously we saw also in the free sessions doing a couple of windsurf style aerials, like Cash was shooting himself 6 meters above the lip. But at the moment in the rule book, it is not allowed to use the wing for airs. The rule at the moment is that that you can use the wing for doing top turns and bottom turns. So if you want to use it on the wave to crash and pass section, you can do it, but you cannot use it for air maneuvers. The reason for the rule is that we don't want to push it too hard into the freestyle direction. But, you know, this is the rule at the moment. I mean, obviously, we are having feedback rounds after every event, talking to the riders, and, you know, what. However the sport will progress, maybe in the future it will be allowed. Still, we want to keep, you know, we don't want to put another freestyle discipline up. This is still about riding waves.
I like the current format where you have to just flag out and do stuff, and it opens the door to surfers, definitely.
Exactly. And you can and you see what kind of airs they actually do without waves. It's incredible. So it is getting closer now to windsurfing and kitesurfing and surfing, where you really try to hit the lip. Now this is, you know, this is the big difference. But also the gear, you know, I was seeing and the guys and girls being definitely on different equipment to last year, you know, on smaller foils, faster foils. It was a bit tricky because on the finals day, it was a really, on the final day, it was a really weird weather situation. We had a Kalima weather. For those who don't know Kalima or are not never traveled to that region, so this is a situation when sand comes flying over from the Sahara, from Africa, towards the Canary Islands and the Cape Verdean Islands. This can happen also in the Canary Islands. If you have a Kalima weather in summer, usually it's windy every day, and suddenly it's Kalima, the whole sky turns to be yellowish, brownish because of the sand, and it can shut down the wind completely, although you have a 30 knots forecast. And we had a similar situation on the finals day. I don't know why it suddenly happened that, and we woke up in the morning and the whole, like the visibility was super bad. And we had a lot of sand in the air and the wind direction was even more offshore than it usually is. It is very offshore in Ponta Preta anywhere, but nearly coming from the other side already. Like you could actually have ridden on the left side already,
yeah.
But we didn't have a judge tower there, so they had to sit right to the right. But you could see, if you could see the live stream, the guys going up behind the wave, they were going even a harder angle than it would have been parallel to the wave. So it's been extremely offshore. I think for kites it would have been impossible to ride, but on a foil, because you flag out the wing completely and you only ride the wave. Once you were on, you flagged out the wing, even with a complete offshore wing, you were able to ride it super well. And that was, showing the big advantage that foils or wing foils especially have over a kite and a windsurf, because you can depower the wind 100%.
Yeah.
Base, you don't use the wing at all anymore. And in the kite or windsurf riding the same spot, you will always use the wing at least a little bit. And when the wind is too offshore, it doesn't work anymore. Yeah, it was again showing us the potential that these wing foils have in such conditions, you know, and in offshore spots where you usually only surf.
And then the critical moves and the critical sections, which we hadn't seen either, which was like insane. So yeah, let's see. And gear progressed that much? Do you find them riding more like a little bit, like what did you see them riding there that made them be able to maneuver so quickly? Smaller foils, but obviously more MA kind of mid-aspect range, or?
Yes, definitely more in mid-aspect because you don't want too much lift. And you know, it's not a wave where glide is that important. Yeah. The wave is so powerful, it's going to push you anyways. It's not a small marshy wave where you need to connect every little bit of energy. It has plenty of energy. And you can ride a medium aspect foil that gives you a better turnability, you know. But it's a lot about the control. It's a lot about having a good balanced foil in terms of fuselage length and the right setting. I mean, I noticed from myself, I've been riding there and with the setups, you're riding on such a high speed that you definitely don't want to touch down during, you know, during turns, bottom turning or top turning, because this really slows your speed. So you're trying to have your foil in the air or like your board in the air all the time. And to be able to do that, you need to be really, really like balanced and locked on the foil. But yeah, I saw a lot of different foils that have been tested from prototypes and production ones, but most of them were between 500 and 700s, yeah, maybe 800 maximum. But I think a lot of the riders were like on bigger ones in the beginning and then were, because they never used these small foils in other spots. And then once they went down to 500, 600s, they were like, huh, we should have used that earlier.
Now, how big of boards were they riding in that?
Very different, I would say. I mean, there was not too many people that were riding very small boards because the problem is the spot is as it's very offshore, it's very gusty. And if you fall on the inside, it is not easy to get back on the board. You know, it's not easy to start. So you don't have a lot of wind. And if you are on a really small board, on a 30, 40 liter prone board, it might happen that you, if you crash and you swim on the in the channel, that it can take you 5 minutes to get back on the foil because you don't have enough lift. So I would say most people prefer to have a bit of volume just to be safe if they are in the lulls to be getting back on the foil more easily. But for sure, I mean, in terms of foil control, the smaller the board, the better it is. So it was, I saw anything. I mean, I saw guys riding 30 liters up to 70 liters, I would say, anything in between there. I mean, Marlo, for example, he rides the same size all the time. Doesn't matter what. He's comfortable with one size. I think he rides around 60 liters, no matter what. If it is on a 2.5 wing in Gran Canaria, or if it is on a big wing in light wings, or if it's waves. I think he feels really dialed in with his board and he uses pretty much the same size all the time.
Okay. Now, what do you think? So top move on the men's side and then top move on the ladies' side. What would you think would be the top highlight of this event?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, one of the top moves was Cash getting barreled and ditching the wing. I mean, I have to say that. One of the most impressive moves that I saw of Cash was those foil slides on the lip. You know, like being able to basically breach your foil, just having one tip of the foil still touching the lip of the waves, sliding it for 10 meters, and then fully controlled, pulling it back in and continuing to ride. This needs so much control and confidence to be able to do. This is incredible. I think that maybe not everybody understands that, but when I saw that, I was like, man, how can you do that and not crash? For me, it was maybe one of the most technical parts. For sure, when it comes to innovation, trying to get barreled without the wing is the number one tool for the men. So, you know, this was just an incredible show. And it just shows us where it can go. You know, maybe we're going to see, I'm sure we're going to see That's more true. Of that in the future, not only in competitions, but in the right waves. Yeah, I think on the women's side, Elena, for me, and it was not specifically a move, but she was just dropping into some really, really big monsters. And she was positioning her so deep. And a couple of times she couldn't hold the foil down because it has too much lift on the wave. And she just catapulted in front of the white water and got completely eaten.
Really?
She only destroyed one wing though. Although she went over the rocks like four times. Yeah, she only broke one wing. In general, I have to say, I was surprised there was not, compared to last year, there was a lot less people that went over the rocks. You know, now everybody got used to the spot. We had a couple of people getting out over the rocks, but not too many. We had not too many wings broken, a lot less than last year. You know, so people got more comfort, let's say, with the spot. It was interesting to see. But with a woman, I would say, yeah. I mean, Mia did also land in some 360s on the wave. Yeah. Mia was performing really well too, I have to say. She was maybe not going as critical as Lena, and as we said, it's a surfing discipline, and that's, you know, the surfing elements are, that's what counts. So being critical, going deep, you know, picking the most extreme line.
Because she finished third, right?
Yeah, she finished third. And she pulled off some 360s on the face without the wing. So, I think the top four girls were performing really well. Bovin, Nia, Muna, obviously. I mean, Muna, I think she has an advantage that she, you know, she kites and surfs and big waves like that a lot. She's an amazing rider, yeah, and so versatile. I mean, she won on the kite division with 2 10 point waves in the final.
Wow,
never seen that in the girls before. She was just killing it on the kite, and she was doing really well on the wing too. But she was not maybe taking as much risk as Elena, and Elena got rewarded for that. And yeah, Muna absolutely agreed to that. Muna was cool to see. She was stoked to see Elena win, and she said she deserves to take the crown here, and it's good to have somebody new charging here. And she was happy with her second place as well. But I think everybody, you know, was just stoked, and it was cool to see the comp in the end with a competition window of 10 days for kite and wing foil, and we finished everything in 5 days. After day five, it was done, and luckily, because actually the day after the finals of wing foil, the waves dropped. It was still working. You know, as I told you, I've been training a bit and the day after, but it's been a lot smaller already. So we were super happy to finish actually in that peak condition. And then everybody still had nearly a week or 5 days to just train. And we had some, you know, some social activities. We went to a school in Santa Maria. You know, Cape Verde is a small place. I mean, Sal de Island has two villages, and so we went to the school.
We had some questions about that, actually, how that social engagement went. Like, how was that for everyone?
In general, all the people in Cape Verde are so open and passionate. They're not shy. So we did that in the past already on the kite events in the last years that we went to a school, and, you know, we brought the athletes to meet the kids between 10 and 18. And they had so many questions, you know, nothing related to the sport mainly. It was more private questions, you know. And we went to this school, which were a lot of young kids. You know, they were all between 6 and 12 maybe. So presented that, our athletes there, especially the ones that also speak Portuguese, the Brazilians, the Cape Verdeans, the Portuguese riders. And they had prepared a couple of questions, and then we did a photo and a dance. And it's been a really nice experience. I think it's something that we want to, you know, when we give the Cape Verde, give back. And, you know, as I explained, it's a small island, and it only has like basically two villages on the island. So there's not so many things to do. It's getting more and more touristic, and there are big hotels now. So there are more and more activities that people can do, but we want to contribute on giving them, let's say, a perspective, you know. And that's why also I think there are already in kiting, you can see that there are so many good athletes, high level athletes coming out of Cape Verde because of the conditions and the community they have. And I want to see that in winging too. It's such a new sport, but there's more and more young kids we hopefully have, you know, now wing schools are starting so they can get access to equipment. Wesley in Boa Vista, I think, was promoting Boa Vista a lot for wing foiling. because the spot in Boa Vista where Wesley is training is, let's say, I mean, Ponta Preta is nice, but it's not for everyone. I mean, this is, I would say, for that.
Well, it's an elite upper level
yeah. of wing foilers. That's the spot you ride. Yeah. Exactly. This is not a place you go out to learn how to ride away. No. And in Boa Vista has actually a spot that is a lot more suitable. Easy access, not such a powerful wave. And it turns out that Boa Vista gets more and more popular for wing foiling, wing foil tourism. So there's also more and more kids that I heard of. There was another Sunny Gee, a friend of Wesley, that he brought with him. He got a wild card to compete in the event too, and he was riding very well too. And he's not the only kid. There's a couple more in Boa Vista that's coming up. And we want to contribute a little bit.
Give back to the community. You know, our
experience from the World Tour. And hopefully in a couple of years, we're going to have, 10 Cadverdians that have the level to compete at the World Cup when we get there.
That's cool.
That would be nice to see. And also the girls' side, hopefully more and more. We had also then in the last day a super session on Kite Beach, which is the option B spot. So when we go to Cape Verde and we don't have the right northwesterly swell to hit Ponta Preta and all the west coast, there is the spot Kite Beach, which is the most popular spot, let's say, on Sal, where the wind swell anyway works. It's like a side onshore spot with a reef as well, but good fun for wing foiling too, but it doesn't have the same powerful waves like Ponta Preta. So we went there to have a super session, like for freestyle. It was a good show. It was on Saturday. The beach was packed. And had a best trick event there just for fun, and then we had a couple of visits around the island. We shot some lifestyle content for the destination, because we definitely want to come back there. And I think Cape Verde is, when it comes to wind and wave competition or in general doing any of these sports, it's one of the best places in the world, and you want to have this on the world tour, and you want to maintain it on the world tour, obviously.
Pretty fantastic. So overall feedback from athletes, organizers, sponsors, it was pretty successful then.
Absolutely. Well, I think the best start we could have wished for the season, it was, everything was working really smooth, and that's been obviously the conditions were top notch. It will be hard to get better conditions, I think, this year, very extreme. So the action was insane, but besides that, it was also our team. I think our GWA team was working really smooth. We had really good, you might have seen a few new media formats. We are switching up this season to give a bit more access to behind the scenes content, not only pure action and, with rider vlogs, with, focusing on a couple of, athletes in portraits and having longer like TV format productions that we can get on mainstream media.
I liked your 10-minute recaps as well. Like your 10-minute recap was awesome. It's almost like out here we'll watch hockey in 30 minutes or hockey in 45 minutes kind of thing. And then it's just, instead of watching a 3-hour game, you can skip through and it shows you highlights. And that's similar to what this format was, which was great. So if you don't have the time to watch the live stream, then at least you can still get caught up and watch that. So that was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a bit more, as I said, mainstream orientated. It is a format that you can even show on TV, because the formats we produced before, which are where the daily highlights, was really something for special interest channels, for all the wing fight channels, for our own channels. But it's not something that a TV would actually broadcast. Well, these 10-minute recaps are, I would say, also entertaining for somebody who is maybe not a complete insider to the sport. He can follow and understand the competition and the event. And then we also produce, but this is something maybe not everybody see, a 26-minute TV highlight show, which is going to air worldwide on television. and which is going to be, you know, broadcasted throughout the next couple of months, plus the live stream. The live stream, obviously. So I think our team was doing a really good job, and on the sports and on the media side, everything was working like a clock. And also, I have to say, it was really smooth operation with the organizer. All the local team on which we depend, you know, the local organization on NS Eventos, with Jada and Joe and all their team, they pull off this event and, you know, build the infrastructure and, you know, also get the financing. We also had support from Duathlon and F1 because we were lacking a bit of budget to support the event. And it was great to see them, you know, believing in this event and making it happen, because also without their support, we would have missed probably the budget to really run the event in the way we did it. So all in all, I think it was, I want to mention that as well, because it's not always that, you know, some industry brands. We have this in the past. We had Armstrong sponsoring and Gong in Morocco last year, for example. Because I think a lot of people don't see that how much cost is involved to pull off such an event. You know, I mean, this is not something cheap, and it's not always that the local organizer or the tourism has actually enough budget to do it. So in this case, Duathlon and F1 both, to an equal part, supported the event, and they were happy with the outcome as well. And so in the end, yeah, amazing. I think we couldn't have wished for a better start. Now we have a few weeks till we go to the next highlight of the year in Leukat, which is not going to be a wave event. It's going to be racing and freestyle, but it's also one of the biggest events with lots of spectators. It's going to be 8 days long. It can be very strong winds. It's going to be the first freestyle event of the season. So we're going to see what moves the boys and girls, what new moves they have in the bag. It's always interesting to see in the first event of the year.
Definitely. So that's coming up April 6th to the 14th. You got a surf freestyle, then you got a free fly slalom. Okay. Oh, we were asked if Balls would join that event.
Yeah, we got Balls coming. We got Golito is going to come. And also the other, obviously, top freestyle guys. And free fly slalom. I mean, we can have really exciting races there as well. It can be really strong. If the Tramontana blows, it can be 30, 40 knots easily.
So you got a maximum of surf freestyle. You got a maximum of 28 guys and then 28 females for this event. Did you find the same push for additional people to get into this one as you did?
Pretty much a similar number. I think around 55 guys that wanted to enter for freestyle and like that.
Okay. Numbers are growing.
You know, it's an event that's in the center of Europe, so it's easy to get there. The event isn't during the holidays. You know, a lot of the young boys that are coming up and girls now. We have a lot of girls. We have 17 girls that are going to compete at freestyle.
That's amazing.
That's the highest number we had so far.
Sweet. Yeah. Nice.
And Leukat always has Leukat. And then also the next one in Tarifa usually have a lot of people that want to.
Any kind of rule changes or any adjustments for this next one from last year that people should know about or can look forward to?
Yeah, we're going to have a little adjustment on the, I think I talked about that in one of our last episodes on the slalom side, but I don't want to talk about it too much yet. We'll present it when it is time. I mean, in the end, it's not that the course is going to change. This I can tell you. I mean, it's still going to have a start and a finish line and go around buoys and have a free fly section, all this, but it's more going to be how the elimination system is going
to
run.
All right. Good to know. And then we're stoked to see what kind of moves these kids and everybody come up with and see what they've been practicing. Yeah, because that's going to be phenomenal. I'm kind of curious.
No, us too. I mean, we are having a meeting actually in a few days with the freestyle committee, the riders committee of the freestylers, to go through the rule book on new moves, because we want to get briefed already in advance what we can expect to see, you know, then it's easier to judge for us. Because obviously if you see a new move in a competition and you've never seen that before, it's really hard to put a score to it.
Like almost getting like a table and saying, okay, so this move is worth X kind of thing. And if it's done well, like all those sort of things, just get a range. Okay, good to know.
So usually after the freestyle events, after each event, we have a debrief with our riders committee, and we're working on the trick list again to implement new tricks, because we have seen new tricks on every event nearly, and see how they should be. Obviously, if it's an innovation move and it's new in the first event, the first time you see it, it's always ranked higher, and it's fair. I mean, we want to push innovation. I mean, we don't want to have people just perfecting what they can already do. We want to see new stuff all the time. So it is rewarded. But then after it has been seen, you need to categorize it, and you need to put it in the rule book and in the move list, and be able to know where it should stand technically. No.
Oh wow. Okay, that's it. That'd be a fascinating process, actually.
We are working very close together. So, and I mean, a lot of our riders have our judges. They all have a very decent level in wing foiling as well. So that doesn't mean that they can all do each of the top moves that only one person in the world can do, but they can understand how difficult tricks are. It's pretty exciting, I think, that these days still to be a judge, because you see new moves all the time. Like, it's been back in the days when kiting started or windsurf freestyle started.
Yeah, you're always trying to gauge the sea, and you never know what's going to show up. That's pretty fun. Okay, so I'm glad the first one went really well, and we're excited for the second one. Are there any other points that you want to tell folks at home about that, or are we pretty good for today?
No, I think we're good. I think, first event of the season has been an absolute highlight, and I hope you all been watching it. If not, then make sure you see some of the recap videos, because for me, it was really the time I realized that wave wing foiling has just been elevated on the next level. You know, and for me, I was really like, okay, this is now foils, a new era, you know, and this is not just testing. Can you actually foil in this way? This is really going hardcore. Yeah. And I'm really curious to see where it's still going, you know. What are we going to see in the next event? Now, the next wave event we have some time is going to be in Morocco in September. So we still have plenty of time for the next one to come up. And I'm sure we're going to see some. Of course, Morocco is not the same kind of wave like Ponta Preta. It's a much more mellow wave, but it's a really good foil wave. It's longer than Ponta Preta, so it gives much more scoring potential. It's maybe not getting as hardcore, but it allows a very technical riding, and I think we're going to see a lot of innovation there.
Oh, beautiful. Well, on that note, thanks everybody for joining us on this special episode, and we'll see you all next time. Thanks, Tom.
All right. See you soon.